It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick Six, sponsored by Affinity Whole Health. Do what I did. Visit FeelGreatIllinois.com to learn more about their testosterone therapy or the weight loss options. Do you agree with our guy Lou Kanellis, who told us yesterday he didn't want Khalil Herbert traded to clear a path for Velus Jones? Do the Bears know enough about Roschon Johnson as a backup running back to move Herbert? Is their running back room good enough not to change it for Jones, or is he too good a kick returner to leave off the roster?
It's an interesting question because I think the key to the question can be found in the term kick returner as opposed to returner. I think it's weird that he can't be a punt returner. Normally, if you have a returner, he's not limited to one aspect of the return game. But I think we've all learned that Velus is. So the question then, it feels like he's not going to make the team as a wide receiver, so you move him to a running back position. But I'm not sure. You know, you got a new running back, DeAndre Swift, who is going to be the starter, who is going to get the majority of the carries. Then you have you have Khalil Herbert and you have Roschon Johnson. Roschon Johnson has the value of being a draft pick, and that goes a long way for people. And, in Khalil Herbert, they have a player that was not drafted by this administration. However, he did average over 4 yards a carry a year ago. And I think that that element is a good one to have, and it's a good one to cash in. Now, generally speaking, you can find running backs on the street. Isn't that what we've learned, that the value of the position isn't as great as it could be, as it should be, because as it used to be, let's put it that way, because you can get those guys, and those guys don't last a long time. I just think that I think it's going to be fascinating to see what value they put on Velus Jones Jr. At this point, I would think he's going to have a hard time making the roster, but they obviously like him as the kick returner. I don't know if that's enough.
Well, part of this has got to be about where they drafted him, right? They're trying to make it look like they didn't make a mistake. They got cute a little bit pretty early for that regime to get cute when they took this guy and then told us about how professional he was. And I'm all for a guy dressing for success and showing up, but you know, he carried a briefcase, right? And had a suit and tie on and all this stuff. Well, listen, we're beyond that. It hasn't worked out. You got to move on. And unless they're going to get some type of a haul, and I mean like a third round draft pick for Khalil Herbert, that would be the only way I could probably stomach this thing. Again, Roschon Johnson hasn't taken a snap yet in the preseason, right? He's been hurt the whole time. So
didn't he play in that Hall of Fame game?
Is that when he played? He okay, so he yep. played in that game. He hasn't played since. I wouldn't cut Khalil Herbert. Let's put it that way. No way. And you're obviously not cutting Roschon Johnson. So I think this is more about the fact that they drafted this guy and don't want egg on their face for this draft pick failing than anything else.
I know it's very popular sentiment to say that Velus Jones can't play. And I get that because he's been a disappointment and he's made some mistakes and some high leverage moments that people remember. But it wouldn't surprise me if he makes this team because he represents, he's got speed, he's got, If he can play a little bit running back, he's got versatility that they don't have. The hybrid role is one the Bears offense probably looks at as it makes them a little bit different. So Shane Waldron may value that more than he values having three conventional traditional running backs. It's a duplicate position. You've got DeAndre Swift. You've got Khalil Herbert. You've got Roschon Johnson. Why is there not more attention paid at what Roschon Johnson hasn't done? He's a very highly regarded draft pick as well. But has he lived up to expectations? Were they oversized expectations as a rookie? Probably. I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know when he's coming back. I would not be as quick to assume that Velus Jones is going to be cut just because he can't catch a punt. I think the Bears might value him in the kickoff return game. I think they're intrigued by what he offers as a hybrid weapon. He does offer explosiveness because he can run. And he can run, and he has the speed that made him the first offensive player drafted by Ryan Poles. I'm not waving the flag for him or getting on a desk and saying he's got to make this team. But it wouldn't surprise me for those reasons. And I think when you look at Khalil Herbert, yes, he has been productive. And yes, I would be loath to release him because I think he still has value in the league. But I don't know that he's an explosive player. And if you trust your starter in Swift and you believe in your backup with Roschon Johnson, I think you could envision Khalil Herbert being somebody they would be trying to shop in a trade because they have a duplicate part there. Velus Jones, as disappointing as he has been, is a different skill set that they don't currently have. Wouldn't shock me if he makes the team.
Because everybody's pretty much asking the same question.
Coach Wanstead's voice there. He's with us at 7:44 for the start of two big segments. When you hear Bears GM Ryan Poles tell the Hoag and Johns podcast that he's become a big believer in Tevin Jenkins, is that all about him, quote, putting together a good stretch where he's playing at a high level and he's available, end quote? Or could it also be comparison to play of uninspired Nate Davis and the injured Ryan Bates?
I think it's the former more than the latter. I think that Tevin Jenkins is somebody that it's easy to understand why a former offensive lineman in Ryan Poles, any football guy watching, would become enamored with his potential. He's got a little nasty in him, and you like to see that in an offensive lineman. He's got the size that allows him to be referred to as a mauler, and he's very good when he's on the field. The thing with Tevin Jenkins is not really about ability as much as it is about availability. That's the old adage with players in the NFL, and it has been the story of his career. If Tevin Jenkins can stay on the field, he is an above-average left guard, and it gives the Bears reason to feel good about their offensive line. If he can't stay healthy, he has no business negotiating a contract extension. You don't want him if he can't play. If he can play, you want him. And I think that's essentially what Ryan Poles is saying.
Well said, David. If he's available, but is, you know, the next part of the question is guards are now getting $20 million a year. That's a lot of dough for a guard. You know, Mully and I have gone round and round about the right guard and the left guard and which one's more important and all that kind of stuff. But I do love that he plays to the echo of the whistle. The other day when Caleb got hit a little bit, he went over there and made sure, like, you want to play games, you're going to have to come play games with me, kind of a thing, which I love. And these are preseason games, so I'm not seeing. He still looks kind of clumsy and slow at this moment. Maybe that will pick up. The other day when Caleb ran the ball into the end zone and Tevin Jenkins was almost like a personal escort, I wanted him to blow that guy up, and he barely touched him and almost looked like he was going to trip over his own feet when he was doing it. He looked very unathletic on that particular play. So $20 million a year for a guard.
I think there's a lot to like about Tevin Jenkins, and I think that Ryan Poles seeing it. And I think that when you talk about his future with the Bears, it comes down to exactly what Poles said, playing at a high level and available. Maybe available more important than playing at the highest level. But, you know, you got a guy that's not available in Nate Davis. And now you bring in, you make a trade for Ryan Bates, and he's got a shoulder. Is that it? What does he got? I don't even know what his issue is, but he's unavailable. So, you know, you can't make the club from the tub. So you need starters, and you need guys you can rely on. I don't know what's going on with Nate Davis and why he was so slow to get up and running, and now it looks like he's back, but it doesn't look like he's had enough time to get himself prepared to play football. So, you know, that's a concern. And, you know, availability. Ryan Bates, where are you, man? You got to make the team. I'm not picking on anybody. Guys get hurt and guys can't play and you don't make a big deal out of it. But Tevin Jenkins is there and he's playing. And if he can play well, and if he can play, you keep him. Simple as that. So it doesn't shock me that you like the available guard that you had among the three you were apparently choosing from.
Can I ask you guys a question?
That's Stacey Dale. She'll be here at 9 talking Bears, talking NFC North. The Bears season opener remains 19 days away. The Bears last played Saturday, which would be more than 3 weeks between snaps if Caleb Williams does sit out Thursday night against the Chiefs. Does the concern for rust outweigh your concern of injury, or do you expect the Bears to start Caleb Williams?
Yeah, this is a difficult one because I think that it's a real idea that it's too long a layoff before you start the season. But it is also a fact that if you play Caleb Williams, then you got to play this offensive line. You got to leave guys out there, make sure he is protected. I don't think Kansas City is going to be playing all their starters. So I think that, you know, it might be another opportunity for the Bears to beat up on backups if that's what you're looking for. I think I've seen enough. If they don't play him, it would not be the end of the world to me. The fourth preseason game's kind of a joke. If they don't play him, I will understand that they feel like they're doing well enough and they like what they've seen and they want a good feeling going into the regular season. Makes a lot of sense. If they do play him, then that means they're going to have to keep guys on the field until they have a feel good. They're not going to play him and go 3-and-out, 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 and then sit him down. So I think that's another thing you probably have to consider is how long do you have to go before you can. You know, I understand the operation and just getting them used to it, et cetera, but I would have no problem if they sit him.
I would be floored if he played in that game.
Yeah.
It would shock me because at this point, and Molly, you talk about the feel good and something I forget if we talked about it on or off the air yesterday, but they finally got that feel good when Caleb ran it in from 7 yards out, and that was the end of his afternoon. Soldier Field was rocking and rolling, and let that just sit. Yesterday they talked about there wasn't a lot of, I didn't see a ton of video yesterday, but they practiced yesterday. He hit one of his wide receivers for 3 touchdowns. He was picked off twice. Yeah. Keenan Allen. So they're doing it up there. They're working hard. Tremaine Edmonds after practice talked about how hard the ones go at each other in the 7-on-7 drills at least. So I would much rather his adrenaline and the hype. That will carry over, I think, any rust. Where an injury, adrenaline can't fix that.
You got the bubble wrap out. You got that in ample supply in your garage. You love the bubble wrap. Dustin loves the bubble wrap.
For that game, yes, I do.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth an argument. I don't really think it's worth something that you pound your fist. You say, this has to happen either way. If you're asking me what would I recommend in a meeting with Matt Eberflus or Ryan Poles, I would say 3 weeks between snaps in a setting, in a game-type setting, is a long time for a rookie quarterback. You get better at football by playing football. I would try to duplicate that. Yeah, there's risk involved. There's risk involved in practice when he's throwing 3 touchdowns at Keenan Allen, when he's throwing 2 interceptions, whatever the case may be. J.J. McCarthy ended his season in practice. It happens. You don't want it to. You want to protect yourself. You want to be smart with the franchise quarterback. But if he wants to play 2 series or 3 series or the first quarter against the Chiefs in a game that means absolutely nothing to kind of continue the momentum, to give him a feeling of the muscle memory and the preparation and getting the play calls from Shane Waldron and covering his ear holes so he can hear it with the crowd noise, great. Because that's experience that matters too. Those things are not insignificant. I'm not saying it is a, you know, drop dead argument, this has to be this way. But if they choose to go that way, I would understand it, and I would probably be in favor of it. And if I were the head coach of the Bears, I probably would start Caleb Williams, because you look around the league and there are varying degrees of commitment to what the fourth and final preseason game means. Brock Purdy is going to start in San Francisco. I think he's their starter, and they want to protect him too, so different coaches will have different interpretations.
Different question on a different topic.
Mike Florio, 844, will take us around the NFL as the Cubs begin this 37-game stretch, 61-64 overall. Are they good enough to finish 24-13 and win 85 games, like necessarily back into the playoffs as the third wild card team? Do you expect a run now?
Bruce threw a lot of math at us yesterday. You start to look at the standings and do the math, and I don't know that 24-13 seems like an impossible task for a team like the Cubs that's been underachieving. But because they've been underachieving, it seems unlikely. Seems unlikely. They are good enough to win 24 out of 36 or 24 out of 37. They are good enough to go on that kind of a run. They have the starting pitching. They have the bullpen, even though Hector Heart Attack Neris is a guy that has let us all down. I think that you look at the Cubs pitching, it's been good enough to contend. Their hitting stinks. Shut out five times since the All-Star game. It's up, it's down. It's the bottom of the order is supplying some pop. And then what happened to the top of the order? And oh, look, Dansby Swanson's got the bat on his shoulder again. This is a very wildly inconsistent offensive baseball team. They're good enough to finish 24-13. They won't, though, because it's been that kind of a season. You can't count on a team that has let you down the bulk of the summer. If they do, it will be great to watch. It'll be thrilling to participate in and tremendous to talk about. But I just don't see that happening. I don't expect a run now. I expect a steady jog.
They've got a shot, okay? Heyman yesterday didn't want to bite on the whole easy schedule type of thing. But the Thursday that the NFL kicks off, before that, they've got six games against the Pirates, three games against the Nationals, three games against the Marlins, and starting tonight, three games against the Tigers. After Thursday night football happens and the NFL is underway, the Yankees are in town that weekend, and then they go out to the Dodgers. So that's six really tough games, right? So of those 15, I think Bruce said, and I would agree, of starting tonight, going up until then, they need to go 11-4.
That's crazy.
Okay. But David, against Tigers, Marlins, Pirates, Nationals, Pirates, it's possible. And they've got me hooked and I'm paying attention. But they got to get some crooked numbers.
Yeah,
You got to get some crooked numbers.
You were hooked as like a 10-year-old and nothing has
didn't have much of a
separated
choice.
It. Yeah. I'm just saying you're hooked. That is not a legitimate. You know, you're going to hope for the best, etc. I think the reality is none of the projections you had for the Cubs are paying off, right? I mean, I don't know what your many predictions were, but I don't think Belly's going to be the MVP. I don't think Steele's winning the Cy Young. I don't think Christopher Morel's going to be an everyday third baseman here because they traded him. I just think a lot of things have not worked out as you projected them to do, and it's difficult now to look at it and say, yeah, they're going to get to 85 wins. You know, I thought they had a chance at that last year. I thought they had a chance to get to the playoffs last year, and was it Miami that got hot at the end and broke a heart or two? I think it would be a sensational story and a ton of fun if it was to happen. But, you know, regardless of how good or how bad, rather, the opponents are, I don't think it's laid out for them in the same way that many believe it is. Just because their high mark is five straight wins. They've done that twice. That, you know, you need to really start stacking some wins. And when you win a couple games and then you lose a one-run game, that doesn't speak to this wow, they're getting ready to blow up. And, you know, you got to win those one-run games. You can't lose any of them. If you have to win a series with 3 one-run games, do it. Don't get shut out. That's the problem.
Those weak teams on the Cubs schedule coming up, as much as the Cubs are looking forward to seeing them, they're looking forward to seeing the Cubs.
Well, there are pitchers that they're going to run into a pitcher here or there.
You don't think the Pirates are saying, oh, they're the Cubs. That's a W.
I mean, the Pirates are in a massive tailspin. Okay. They went from second place in the division to last place in the division in like the course of 2 weeks.
I think
great sweep, Paul Skeens.
Sweep Detroit starting today. And then we can have another conversation.
Correct. Get to 500, absolutely
then
correct.
We can have a
right. Get to 500, and then you can really be hooked
there
like
you
me.
Go. And we can all be as addicted as Dustin to hope.
Pick six.
Javi Baez returns to play at Wrigley tonight for the first time since being traded in 2021. What do you think is the biggest reason for his steep career decline? How different would his career be if he had stayed in a Cub uniform?
Well, I love Javi, and I did love him as a Cub, and that was one of the coolest plays I've ever seen. I don't know if you remember it, that time when he was running toward first. At any rate, I hate to say this, but this is a classic case of a guy who got paid and stopped playing. That's what it looks like. Looks like a guy that... seemed to really have something special, seemed to have a connection, came close to getting a contract done here, and then ends up kind of bouncing around to get money and never pays off. It just kind of stopped playing, whether that's a cruel way of looking at it or not. You know, whether the energy changed when he got to teams that don't have fan bases, whatever it might have been. The guy stopped playing. And, he got paid and he stopped playing. That happened.
Well, he signed a 6-year, $140 million guaranteed contract, a little over $23 million a year. He's on the wrong side of 30. Detroit obviously does not have the energy at their stadium that they have at Wrigley. Look at last Sunday. I mean, it was a nice day. It wasn't great. There were two rain delays in that game. I mean, the place was absolutely mobbed with people, packed. And the Cubs are 3 games under 500 at that point, or 2 at that point. So maybe it's that. I would like to know, like, is he, the people covering the Tigers, like, is he taking batting practice? Is he still working at the craft, or is he not? And maybe the whole Mets experience, like he hasn't recovered from going there and he booed the fans, which is something he would have never done here. He would have taken the boos from the Cub fans and accepted it. It just, I don't know if it's because he left here and thought he was going to make even more money as a Cub, and then that didn't happen because of COVID, like the contract.
Did
COVID got him at the wrong time for the contract.
Did playing with his buddy Frankie Lindor work against him?
That's,
you know,
another,
what I mean?
Point, like, to consider.
All of a sudden, he's playing with a guy who's better than him. Did that impact him in some way?
I don't think so. I think just being away from Wrigley Field and being away from an environment that made him thrive and helped him reach his potential, I think mentally he may have not consciously checked out, but it's a different type of preparation. It's a different type of experience when you get out of your comfort zone, and probably very difficult when you're trying to do the hardest thing in sports, hitting a 98 mile per hour fastball, or just hitting in general. He only has 32 home runs since he became a Tiger. That's a far cry from when 2018 and 2019, two fabulous back-to-back seasons, the height of Javi mania. And it was a mania because he was as popular as any Cub from that era. And he was the guy we watched on Sunday, the Yankees go to the Little League World Series and have the Little League Classic game and all the Little Leaguers going over Juan Soto and all of the things. Remember when that was Javi Baez? Remember when he was the guy that made people go, ooh, I want a piece of him. Oh, I want to look at him, how exciting he is. That has changed dramatically, and I hope that he enjoys the video tribute tonight. I hope that the fans give him the standing ovation he deserves. It's a mystery. It will always be a mystery. The Javi Baez after the Cubs, what happened to that guy? What happened to that player? I always think he'll regret and maybe wonder not signing that contract with the Cubs before COVID hit and then the offer went away. So you wish him well, but I think that his best days certainly are in the past. I just don't know that he can ever get back to that level.
The most asked question should be
Steve Stone there. He'll be here at 9:25 as he's out west. Who is the White Sox player with the most to gain over the remainder of this lost season? Can you name one pitcher, one position player who stands to benefit in the final 36 games for the Southside baseball team?
Wow. Well, I think that it's hard to envision just one. I mean, there's a lot at stake still. These games do matter. But I do wonder how Andrew Vaughn is going to finish. I know that a lot of other guys can get opportunities. Andrew Vaughn started so slow. We kind of have overlooked the progress that he has made in his numbers since a terrible start. I think he can try to solidify himself a little bit better as a major league hitter in the final 36 games that remain. So that would be my position player. As far as a pitcher, maybe we saw the guy last night. You could say Kai Bush, but I think Jonathan Cannon needs to finish strong with some consistency so they can pencil him into the rotation for 2025 to begin the season.
Yeah, I think Brooks Baldwin, I think the experience at shortstop, I mean, they're hoping that that's their long-term answer at that position. So I think I think they also should move him up in the batting order. I don't think he should be batting at the bottom of the order. I think he should be moved up. Just like I had said, as soon as the Cubs, when and if it's officially done, PCA should be batting probably leadoff to get him as many at-bats as they can possibly do. And then I think you have to look at, from a pitching standpoint, you have to look at guys that they got, meaning the Sox, that they got in trades. And can those guys be guys that can be depended on to at least be a bridge over the next year or two?
I think Brooks Baldwin's a good answer. He played well last night, had a good game for himself. I think that he's making some defensive plays. I'm not sure he can hit. I don't know how that's going to work out for him. But, you know, you think about it, this is a guy that was a 12th-round draft pick in 2022, and he looks like someone's young child.
He's been, he looks like he was playing at the Little League World Series.
I mean, honest to God, he's a very young-looking man, and he is
now
a young
batting
guy
for Hinsdale.
No doubt about it. But he's got speed, and he's a pretty good defensive player. And, yeah, I'd say that a guy like him has a chance to show something. And Dominic Fletcher has suddenly come back into the picture and has made some defensive plays of late. And that sort of thing gets you a roster spot moving forward. I think Jonathan Cannon's a good answer because he's another guy that I don't think he was projected to be as essential a part of the future as maybe today you think he has a chance to be in the rotation.
How about the guy pitching tonight, Davis Martin?
Davis Martin's another good answer because he was a guy that kind of silently doing very well for himself, but not like considered like a stud type pitcher that you think has a big future with the organization. So that's a good answer too. I think guys like that, guys that were sort of medium talent guys that suddenly look like they got a chance to stick with an MLB team. And that's kind of what this season is about for a lot of these guys.
Yep.
Unfortunately, you know, there's nobody that you really look at and say, I mean, like Luis Robert has got tons of potential, but he hasn't put it together this year for some reason. And I think that when you are losing, even, you know, Vaughn, I don't know what's happened to him. You know, Corey Lee's kind of fallen off the ledge, and they got the young guy Cuero coming at some point. He's the catcher of the future. So I don't, you know, I think it's a very difficult question because of the circumstances that are facing this team right now.
Tough all the way around.
Yep, no doubt about it. All right, we've got a great extra point. We'll get to that next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
On Monday's midday show, Jim Miller talked about Caleb Williams' mental toughness, making him different from most of his predecessors as a Bears quarterback.
I think he has the mental toughness to deal with the ups and downs or when people are criticizing him. He's already been under a lot of criticism at USC. He's been under a lot of criticism for a long time about his decisions, his personality, all these things, but he is who he is. And that doesn't, you know, outside noise doesn't seem to bother him.
Do you agree or do you disagree and why?
A lot of respect for Jim Miller, and I think that he can speak to that dynamic better than we can. I think that he lived it and experienced it and understands it much better. So when we talk about all that comes with being the franchise quarterback of the Bears in a city like Chicago, when Jim Miller says that Caleb Williams is better equipped to handle it because of his mental toughness than his predecessors, that to me is noteworthy. That to me is worth remembering. And when you hear Caleb Williams talk, it only reinforces what Jim Miller is saying. It's not so much what Caleb Williams says as much as how he says it. There's not a hint of condescension. He's talking to you, not at you, not down at you. He doesn't feel threatened by questions that may ask him about things that he didn't do well. He doesn't mind talking about shortcomings. He doesn't mind accepting blame and responsibility for bad plays. He's not threatened by the scrutiny or fazed by the fanfare. He is a franchise quarterback who feels responsible for every aspect of the operation. And the only thing more impressive than his executions of plays are the explanations of them. He is well-equipped for this challenge. To hear Jim Miller put it in those terms makes you understand what everybody's been talking about, why the Bears identified early as his pro day, that he was their guy. The vetting was over. And they had arrived at the conclusion that Caleb Williams is the answer.
He's been pretty good overall. His body language isn't always fantastic. He was talking to himself, looking up in the air multiple times Saturday afternoon when things weren't going great for that Bears offense. I hope we don't have to come in here on a Monday after a one touchdown, three interception, divisional loss by 10 points and have to see how he handles that. Now, is he equipped? Think so. Being out in LA and USC quarterback, it's a tough job. It's tough to be the number one overall pick. It's tough to, you know, deserve a $22.5 million signing bonus. So all those things are tough, and we'll see. I'm not sure yet how he's going to handle that. I'm not sure how he's going to handle when he does get pressure up the middle from an offensive line that's not holding up. I don't know how he's going to do when Roma Dunze is out of bounds and catches a brilliant pass. How is he going to handle that when it's real, when it really counts? To be determined.
I got a lot of respect for Jim Miller. I think it's an interesting point that he makes. And Jim knows, you know, he started at Pittsburgh, right? And he was going to be heir apparent to Bradshaw in Pittsburgh at one point. I mean, I know he was a later round pick, but nonetheless, he was vying for that starting job at one point. He winds up as the quarterback in Chicago. These are like places that it's difficult to play, where the fan base is passionate, where people love their team. I am very curious to see how this works out with Caleb Williams. It's been going just swimmingly, and I think we talked about all the positivity that's surrounding this right now. It won't last. There will be difficulty. There will be obstacles. There will be some tough games out there. That's the nature of the NFL. It's the nature of the position. And, you know, it's obviously difficult to play in places where the fans just love their team, care about it, and every single moment is under extreme scrutiny. So I think he looks capable of handling it. I think he looks like a guy who has been at the top of his position group for as long as he has played the game and is almost kind of groomed for greatness in the NFL when you follow the career that he's had and the moves that he's made. I mean, you know, this is a minor thing, but he comes into Chicago with $10 million in the bank. This guy is a professional player. Whether we want to call him an amateur and claim that that it's just growing pains and he's got to mature and be more professional, I think he's been kind of a professional player. I don't mean that in a negative light. I just mean this is different. The modern game is different than things were, both from a college standpoint, a guy that's a starter at Oklahoma, transferring with his coach to USC. That, you want to talk about scrutiny, you want to talk about criticism and winning a Heisman Trophy and then suffering a setback kind of year. He's just been through a lot.
Weathered.
He's weathered a lot before he's even gotten here.
There's not a hint of anything that would qualify as naivete.
No.
There's not that
kind
of deer in the headlights look moment where he's been overwhelmed.
Right.
Now, will that come? Maybe the first loss, maybe the first 9-for-19 outing. Who knows what it will be? But so far, you just haven't seen it.
No. It's to this point, I have no complaints at all. In fact, the only complaint I would have is that there was so much misinformation about who he was, what he wanted. Oh, he's demanding a piece of ownership. The ridiculous stuff that was out there before he got here. And I think that's just been sort of watching him stack successes. But that doesn't last. The NFL is a very demanding, difficult, tough profession. So we'll see how it works out. But no complaints at all at this point. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to him being mature enough to conquer all. There will be obstacles.
There will be obstacles.
Yeah. Adversity is part of playing any sport, being a great professional athlete.
So far, so good. And I'm curious how he will push back the first time that he pushes back.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
The Bears.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. It's fun to talk about the Bears in a positive way to start a season.
Well, everybody's
right?
doing it. Everybody is doing it, not just in Chicago. You look around and you hear Rich Eisen talk about Caleb Williams. You hear Dan Orlovsky change his opinion about. Remember when he was on ESPN talking about, well, the Bears might want to take Jaden Daniels. And now he's saying that Caleb Williams might be the best quarterback they've ever had. Albert Breer's writing about him very eloquently in SI.com. James Jones, LeSean McCoy, a lot of chatter about what we saw Saturday. Locally, nationally, the Bears are one of the it teams in the National Football League right now.
I'm just trying to think of different quarterbacks who've come into the league and really faced no adversity. Like at some point, there's going to be a moment where we're all going to have to gather ourselves and hold our water and be able to handle
of course.
The growth of a player.
Brace for that. Understand that. But don't resist the enthusiasm because you know that's coming. I'm not talking to you. I think generally speaking.
I'm very happy.
I know you're very happy. I love it. I think when you look at the example, the team and the quarterback that just left town after Saturday is one to look at. What Joe Burrow did for the Cincinnati Bengals is what Caleb Williams can do for the Chicago Bears.
Great point.
Number one overall pick.
Yep.
A franchise that has been a laughingstock before he arrived.
Came in with a great receiver.
First round as well.
Yep.
And changed that franchise. You don't look at the Bengals and consider them a punchline of anybody's joke any longer. You say about them what you want to say about the Bears. If healthy, they're going to be good if the quarterback is on the field. Caleb Williams can have the same type of impact in Chicago with the Bears.
That's a really good one. It's hard not to look, and I know I'm not supposed to do this, but it's hard not to look at Patrick Mahomes' career, and how he came into the league. And it you know, he got to wait a year. But has there been any downside to anything that's going on with
no.
You know what I mean? Like you
still
know,
waiting for that lull. Still waiting for that,
that
kind
lull.
Of setback.
There you go.
And still waiting for that enthusiasm to die down. It never has. And he had the year of an apprenticeship. He had that internship under
yes.
Alex Smith and Andy Reid. He took advantage of that. I don't think that's realistic any longer.
I'm not even
NFL.
Sure he needed it.
Didn't need it.
Yeah. Let's try our buddy John. John's in Joliet. Hey, John.
Good morning, guys. You know, I hate to put, if this is the right way to say it, David, the cart before the horse. But there is a sense or a feeling that I get, and I hope I'm not getting too overexcited about it, but this team just seems like they're bringing out an enthusiasm in me that I have not felt in a long time. And, you know, there was a game where the Bears opened up against the Packers. We got so fired up. We got so excited and lost, what, 10-3? It was a goose egg. I don't feel that. I actually feel like this is going to be something special, and I am so looking forward to it. Let me hear what you got to say, guys.
All right, John. Thanks, buddy.
It's a really good point. A lot of people feel the same way. I think when you look at the Bears, it's not just Caleb Williams. It's the way they've built their defense. It's the way they've stacked their locker room with character guys. You draft picks. Free agents. You heard yesterday from Daniel Hardy on the Midday Show, who won their Ken Mastrolli Award. He's a young man that came across very well, but I think it's reflective of the kind of character guys they have put on this roster. And when you do that, good things happen.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.